Hello and welcome from Sir Henry Floyd Grammar School here in Aylesbury for another episode of Unbelievable. I am your host for today, Samuel McKee, and I'm joined by two outstanding guests for a discussion about the future of religion as science and technology advances. We're in the presence of greatness today, guys. I'm delighted to be joined by a physicist and a biophysicist. We've got Professor Paul Heslop, who's Professor of Mathematical Physics from Durham University. And we've got Professor Simon Walker-Samuel, who's Professor of Biophysics at UCL. Two great men doing great work at great universities. We also have a Christian theist here and a trustee of Humanists UK. So two very different positions on this question today. And the question today is, does religion have a future by the end of this century as science and technology continues to advance? Gentlemen, I just want to invite you to say a bit more about yourself and your research. So I'll start to my left.
Okay.
Simon.
So I, as you say, I'm a biophysicist, which means I studied physics quite a long time ago now, but as undergraduate, I did physics and then used that in my research, applied physics to biological problems. So mainly using medical imaging, for example, or mathematical modeling of disease tissues. It's that interface between physics principles and biology, which is where things get really complex. So biological tissues, biological systems, really complicated. So adding physics in can sometimes make that easier, but not always. It can just add to the complexity sometimes. So that's the kind of the field, is those kind of that interface between biology and physics.
And you're doing fantastic work in cancer research, and we all really benefit from it. Paul, introduce yourself and where you're from.
I'm Paul Heslop. I'm from Durham. I work on quantum field theory and quantum gravity and string theory. So quite a bit less practical, I would say, than Simon's work. But we're sort of trying to understand kind of the fundamental equations that describe the universe that we live in. It's quite hard. We've discovered equations that agree with all the experiments that take place at the moment. There's general relativity on the one hand, and the standard model of particle physics, which is a quantum field theory, on the other hand. Everything seems to agree a bit too well with it, but there's various kind of mathematical reasons. I have a more of a maths background, so we're trying to mathematically both join these theories together, get a unified theory, try and simplify the standard model, try and reduce the number of free constants and that sort of thing.
Yeah, lots of fun.
Yeah, lots of fun indeed.
Thank you both for being here today and taking part in this conversation. So just to frame what we're discussing, last century, the sociologist Peter Berger put forward the secularization thesis, which is the idea that as a society becomes more scientifically and technologically advanced, the level of religiosity will go down. Now, while that didn't entirely happen, it did happen in part. However, we are at a new frontier right now with artificial intelligence, robotics, genetic engineering, spacefaring, personalized medicine, the way we do being human and the way we do relationships, the way we do work is changing, and it's changing very, very rapidly. As society advances, what place is religion going to have? Is it going to even have a place? Is it going to change shape? These are the questions that we're discussing today from two different perspectives, and we look forward to taking yours as well. Simon, I'd like to start with you. What do you think the landscape of religion is going to be by the time these guys retire?
Right. I mean, 2100 is probably nearer than I think it is, because you forget how quickly time goes. So religion, Christianity specifically, not singling it out for any other reason other than sort of we're most familiar with it, but Christianity has been declining over the last sort of 150 years, maybe a bit longer. So there's a sense that maybe religion is sort of dying out, at least in the UK, maybe in the West. America, slightly different story, but sort of Western Europe seems to be following that trend of declining adherence to Christianity. That said, does that mean that everyone who no longer calls themselves a Christian calls themselves non-religious? And if so, what does that mean? So I'm a humanist, so I'm here sort of representing Humanists UK. So whilst I don't believe in gods is one sort of aspect of humanism, I believe in sort of the positive characteristics of humanity. So things like using empathy, using science, you know, valuing art, those kinds of things. So those sort of positive characteristics that form my worldview. That seems to be consistent with about a third of the UK population, more or less, most of which don't know that there's a word for it. So that is what humanism is, but most people who believe those things wouldn't necessarily call themselves humanist, just because it's not sort of out there in the zeitgeist. The rest of the non-religious, so the people that maybe have stepped away from formal religion, what they believe is also quite fascinating. And there's a lot of sort of spiritualism that happens, a lot of sort of, there's a resurgence of pagan beliefs, for example, that seems to be happening. I think that's the quickest growing belief system in the UK. Don't fact check me, I think that's true. Humanism is the fastest growing non-religious worldview. You should also get in that in. So does that mean that in 2100 there will be no religion? It depends what you mean by religion, just to kind of step back further from the question. For me, religion is sort of a formalized sort of set of activities with some sort of leading guiding principle, probably a belief in a deity, some sort of doctrine, scriptures, all that kind of thing. I can imagine there being less of that and maybe more sort of individualized belief, which could still be supernatural. I don't think now, you know, everyone will turn into a humanist necessarily. And I think there's lots of reasons for that that maybe I won't delve straight into at this point. But I think psychologically, humans often fall back on that sort of set of beliefs of a sort of a deity and that kind of thing. And I think particularly when times become more uncertain, that's more likely to happen.
Sort of times of crisis, people will still instinctively reach for something greater than themselves, perhaps.
Yeah, and particularly sort of a deity. I think there's something within humanity that looks for a deity, looks for sort of agency in the universe that I'd argue is probably their own agency, but sort right. of represented, you know, reflected in the world in yeah. a way that humans do.
Brilliant. Thank you. Paul, I'm interested in your answer to this question. What do you think year 2100, the religious landscape would be?
Yeah, well, I would agree with a lot of what Simon just said, especially at the end about how people are searching for some sort of thing beyond themselves, some sort of deity. As a Christian, I believe Christianity is true. And therefore, I believe that people will see that and eventually, you know, and it's interesting to try and understand why science has led to this decrease in faith in Christianity, or even if science has led to this decrease, quite why has this decrease sort of tied in with science? I'm not sure it's necessarily clear that that's the case. So, yes. So I guess I'm maybe one part of me would dodge the question and say, what is actually the truth of why we are here? What we're made for, why does science work? These sorts of bigger questions that go kind of beyond science. And the sociological questions are sort of part of that. It's interesting to try and understand why people believe what they believe, but ultimately it's the kind of the truth of the matter that I suppose is more interesting to me.
So there's a couple of things that you mentioned. Firstly, that if it's true, then it's not going to go anywhere. If you're seeking truth, you're going to find it anyway. And the other thing was the question of science leading to a particular decline in religious faith. But you are a world-class mathematical physicist. You work with Stephen Hawking. You've been in Cambridge and all over the world. Has science ever felt like a threat to your particular religious beliefs as a physicist?
I mean, not the science that I work in. On the contrary, I grew up in a Christian family. My dad was a physics teacher briefly before I was born, but he always kind of conveyed this interest in physics. But then he also became a vicar when I was about eight or so. So I've always had that kind of Christianity with science there. Yeah, I mean, he was more of an experimentalist, so he can't quite understand why I went into
theory. You went the other way.
That's right.
Okay.
So for me, I guess I've always seen what I do is trying to understand God's ideas after him. So understanding the laws of physics, and they are very simple and beautiful mathematical laws that we're discovering all the time. And for me, I'm understanding God's laws after him. If you don't believe in a God, then there's a question as to why we have these laws of physics. Why are they simple? Why are they mathematically beautiful? How is it that we can understand them? These questions they transcend the science itself. They're kind of meta questions, if you like.
Right.
And these questions aren't really going away. You know, I don't see how the furthering of science, as you say, the robotics and AI and things like this, they certainly talk into this, but these bigger so-called meta questions, if you like, I think they're always going to be there. And I don't see a kind of answer from within just the science itself for those questions.
Right. So that's a great place to lead on, actually. Are we hardwired to look for meaning and why questions? So if you go to Blackwell's or Waterstones today, you'll find tons of books on the shelf by writers like Yuval Noah Harari, if any of you have read Sapiens or Homo Deus or any of those books, or Steven Pinker, or Martin Rees, who might be making the case that for evolutionary reasons, religion has been helpful in getting us here, but we kind of don't need it anymore to go forward. How do you feel about that as a position? Or do you think, as Paul suggested, maybe that we are just keep continually hardwired to look for the big answers?
I think we're hardwired, and I think that's it's very easy to say it's evolution, it's because of evolution. Very hard to prove that. So this is very much a kind of statement, you know, in that vein, that I think we've evolved to, and it makes sense that we've evolved to understand the world, to be able to thrive in it, to, you know, to find food. So if we understand the mechanisms that kind of govern everything around us, and that's where kind of physics has come from, that we've sort of gone, oh, look, apples falling from trees. I wonder if we can model how fast the apple falls from the tree and why it bounces so high and those kinds of things. We've become very good at that, and we've evolved brains that enable us to do it, and we've thrived. So I can kind of frame, in my own understanding at least, a sort of evolutionary frame for why we look for meaning. And within that bucket, I could probably throw religion, because it's our first attempts to really understand and try and answer those big questions. It also throws science in there too, because that's a kind of human thing that we've invented. You know, have we discovered maths? Did we invent it? Let's not go there. But it's all to understand what we are, our place in the world, and how we can just carry on being alive in it. And that's the sort of evolutionary drive to kind of carry on being here. So I'd say these are all human things, and that religion, going back to the religion thing, is just one part of those, of, you know, of that understanding the world. And we are, now that we've seen what we can do with science, increasingly, the religious supernatural bits keep getting pushed further and further away from our models. Mm. To the point that my model just doesn't include it at all. You know, my background is, you know, my parents were non-religious. My grandparents didn't really say what they were, but, you know, no one ever went to church or anything. So it never has really infiltrated my understanding, my model of the world. So, you know, and that's where I can kind of continue being, and it sort of works. And I can see that it could work for other people too.
I wonder here, as a humanist, it doesn't seem like even the super advanced animals do the whole why question or settle around philosophizing about life, like in the way that we uniquely do. Do you think then that humans will always be necessarily religious in some way? But when we're living on Mars, will that just get channeled in different directions?
I mean, humans are only religious as long as someone continues calling themselves religious. So if everyone had my worldview, then religion would no longer be. Mm. I'm not here to persuade people that's the right way to be. I'm just telling you that's my experience and the experience of lots of others. And if everyone adopted that, then humanity would stop being religious. Would that be a better place? I think I'd be very, you know, it's quite an arrogant thing to say, of course it would be. Yeah, everyone should think the same way as me. There are benefits of religion. It's not a one size fits all. So I'm not saying that people shouldn't be religious, but there is this alternative to being religious. And if the next inhabitants of Mars are religious or not, I don't know what it will change necessarily, because we are a mix of religious and non-religious currently.
Paul, I'm curious, as a scientist who is a Christian, what is it about being a Christian that you find is just so beneficial or so helpful for being human that you wouldn't find anywhere else?
Well, I mean, Christianity, I guess, is in my whole life. I try to follow the ways of Jesus, who showed us the best way to live, I think. I suspect a lot of the ways that I try to live are probably consistent with the humanist kind of ways that they try to live. So I guess what I'm trying to talk about is a more philosophical, reason for having these beliefs. But also, on the other hand, you also have a belief that Jesus is with you, his spirit is living inside you and helping you to, even helping you to do your physics, right? Doing physics, as I said at the start, is sort of doing God's thoughts after him in some sense. I believe he delights in us doing that. I mean, there are a few things I might want to pick up on.
Sure, go ahead.
So there was one, talk about evolution. I mean, the slight worry about the fact that we're evolved and we, maybe there are reasons why we have, believe in religions because of whatever evolutionary things. It's all very descriptive. And then the question is, what about truth? In some sense, kind of, we're evolved, maybe we're determined in some sense. You know, maybe I was brought up a Christian, you were brought up an atheist in some sense. And so, and then very quickly you get to the thing, well, okay, we're just doing what we're kind of programmed to do. But I think we both believe that there is truth, right? There is a truth to the question of whether there is a God or not. And that we're having this discussion about whether it's true or not, and it's meaningful to have the discussion. We're not just kind of automaton robots, parroting stuff. Maybe sometimes we are, but like behind it all, there is a sort of a meaning behind it. I find that very hard to kind of understand from a purely naturalistic worldview. That was one thing. Yeah. There's another one.
I wonder, is there anything you want to comment on that?
I don't know. How does that work? So how there's a bit of a free will kind of issue within the question. Is, we have this sense that we have free will, that we can kind of, that we have agency, that we can make our own part, we can make decisions in the world. And that is a very powerful sense. Is it real? The physicist in me cannot understand how that is possible. So, our brains are natural objects. They kind of run on electricity and other physics kind of based principles. And every time you see a sort of a current in that bit of the brain, it's because of an ion flux in that part of the brain. And it's all completely deterministic. And you can trace every event within the brain back to the Big Bang if you want to. And it would be a deterministic chain, according to my physics brain. So where is agency with it? Where is the bit of me that can go, I'm going to make a decision and I'm going to make that neuron fire, which will make my hand pick up the thing? I mean, there's we can't understand that, and I don't know the answer to that, and I'm going to leave it at sort of in that kind of space of hopefully some future creative scientist will come up with some framework to help me understand how that's possible, and that's where I'll leave it.
But that ties quite well into the question of the debate. As things go, by 2100. And things about, like, from the biologist's perspective, the world is completely different to what it was before the end of the Human Genome Project. Mm-hmm. And that was when I was the age of these students here. So you look at the rate of how things change, particularly with robotics, artificial intelligence, genetic engineering, or these things we mentioned. You mentioned those frontiers being pushed. Mm-hmm. Do you think some of these big questions, even the big questions, could be pushed completely beyond the frontier in your lifetime,
Yeah. I mean, so AI is one of those great frontiers. So, you know, is ChatGPT conscious? Is one question that keeps kind of coming up. So these large language models that we use to hopefully not write our essays, are they conscious in some way? I don't think they are. I don't think they are at all. But they could be. I mean, because they are, what are they doing? So they're taking a word or a phrase and they're predicting the next most likely thing to come within that sort of this big language model that they've been trained on. Maybe that's what our brains do. Maybe we're just doing that. We're just coming up with the next likely thing. And we're just a kind of model, a neural network, a real neural network, not an artificial one. And in that sense, maybe we're not actually conscious, but this is some sort of experience that kind of sits alongside that predictive model. And neuroscience is kind of saying the same thing, that our conscious experience is just a predictive model. This is one area of neuroscience. It's not the only one. Mm-hmm. So will AI provide some sort of insight into our own sort of experience of consciousness and free will and all those kind of things? It's possible. Or it may just be one of those problems that's still just not amenable to being cracked open.
It seems to be a little bit self-defeating if you're kind of you're saying that maybe you're self-determined. Sorry, maybe you're just determined to be saying what you're saying, but then you're trying to say something that is true. You're saying that it's true, but then why should I believe what you're saying if you're just determined to say that?
What is true becomes very slippery at that point.
Right.
So am I understanding? So this sort of the neuroscience model of the world is that, you know, we are basically sense organs attached to a neural network. Mm. And from the moment that we're born, we start forming this model to predict the next sensory input, and we just get very, very good at it. And that's all that we have. It's this kind of sense of the world through that predictive model,
the intuition that we have that we're saying more than that is just an intuition that is wrong, basically.
No one knows at this point, I don't think, whether it is, do we have free will or not, because there's no way of testing it.
I mean, I guess I come at it from a slightly different point. I think we should be better at trusting our intuitions. Now, it's a very dangerous thing to do, because obviously science does push against our intuitions very often. But I kind of think that you should sort of trust your intuitions more until there's something really definitive against it. So one example is special relativity. So there's this intuition that if my twin goes off to Alpha Centauri and comes back, he'll be the same age as me when he comes back. That's a strong intuition we might have, but we know that that's not actually going to be the case because of special relativity says differently. But I can believe that time runs faster as you go. It's not that strong an intuition in me. Whereas the intuition that I'm speaking truth is very, very strong, I think. And then also I might as well just stop speaking if I don't believe that. The other thing I wanted to say is about determinism. Now you know a lot more about how the brain works. But within kind of fundamental physics, then determinism is not at all clear for many different reasons. So, you know, the most deterministic thing you can think of are billiard balls, snooker balls on a table. As anyone who's played snooker knows, you may be quite good at hitting the white and then hitting the red over there, maybe less good at potting the red. Every time you hit a billiard ball, the inaccuracy grows. It grows exponentially, maybe 10 times each time. So very, very quickly, these inaccuracies grow. So if you wanted to predict where all the billiard balls were after 20, 30 collisions, you would have to know the precision of the initial shot to accuracy, which goes far beyond what fundamental physics says you can do. There's Heisenberg's uncertainty principle that says that position and momentum can't both be determined. Beyond that, with quantum gravity, there's good reasons to believe that there's this thing called the Planck scale, which means the length scales below, I think it's something like 10 to the minus 30 something.
I don't know.
I should have looked that up first. They don't make sense anymore, because basically if you try and probe to that distance, a black hole will form of that size. So, you know, this whole idea of determinism, especially when you've got many, many things going around, what does that really mean? There's no way that we can think that the accuracy with which these initial conditions are there have to be infinitesimal, you know, really ridiculously small, very, very quickly. So in that sense, I don't think determinism is a realistic thing within modern physics.
Okay, so when we're asking these questions about what it means to be human and where religion would fit into that, you think a lot of these big questions are still going to be there, regardless of...
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to pin everything on that sort of thing, because as we've discussed, the science changes, you know. I mean, the argument I just said, it's hard to see how you can get around that, however the science changes, but still, maybe it will. So, but as I said, I mean, my reasons are more these meta questions, these sort of self-referential things that make me believe that there's something else. And of course, in the person of Jesus, looking at the Gospels and those sorts of questions, which bring it, you know, right from highfalutin stuff right back down to earth, and looking at evidence for the resurrection. So they're the main things that I would go for, yeah.
I sense we could have 100 mini debates slot out of this one. So I want to try and make sure I rein things in a little.
Yeah.
But it seems from Paul's side, you've got two things here. You've got the question of ultimate truth being ultimate truth, and the sense that even though, especially because we're human, a lot of the big questions of meaning and purpose and value and all of that will still be there just because we're human. But what we've also got to consider is potential scientific revolution on the contradictory of things going. Are people still going to be kneeling and praying in temples to Jesus on Mars or Alpha Centauri 100 years from now?
Right. Yes. Okay. And again, who knows? But I would say probably. I'd say probably. So whilst I think it's perfectly consistent to have a model of the universe where there is no God in it. So my internal model that I've constructed since birth doesn't have a God in it, and it seems to work pretty well. I mean, at least as well as, you know, sort of religious people's internal models for day-to-day life, for kind of, you know, all the aspirations I have in the world. And I'd argue that a lot of religious people act, you know, live as if there is no afterlife, for example.
Right.
You know. Anyway, there's another mini debate there. So I still think there's this inherent human need, and it's very easy to slip into that mode. And most people don't have the kind of internal model that I have, because I'm so embedded in science because of my job and, you know, sort of my university degree. I have a very scientific worldview. So maybe it's inevitable that sort of I have a non-religious worldview because of that. I don't know. But I think you can live any number of different ways, and many of them, it's easy to kind of go into that mode of religious belief. And I think that's been throughout the whole of human civilization. So I wouldn't believe if there were temples on Olympus Mons, that's when it comes to it. Would that be, I mean, is it a better thing, you know, a good thing or not? I don't know. But I think we can live without religion fundamentally. And I think it's probably an easier way to live.
If I try and frame this argument better within what people like Yuval Noah Harari are saying, perhaps it would be helpful if I brought in some examples. So genetic engineering, when it comes to things like aging or battling cancer, something a lot more in your field, if we get to the point where we're so good at fighting back against the mechanisms of cancer and the mechanisms of aging, through what we can do with gene editing technology and genomic medicine, those sorts of things. And people are living to 200 years old. And if someone's getting cancer, you can meet it where it's at each time. AI is fundamentally changing the way a lot of people do relationships. People are falling in love with their AI girlfriend and boyfriend. Please don't do that, students here. It's not going to lead anywhere good. And people are getting much more isolated in the way that we live. Is there not a situation here where the way we as humans live and do our lives is so different 50, 100 years from now that the dynamic role that religion plays in society could vanish, or at least change shape to such a way that it's really not like what we have today?
I mean, it is inevitable, I mean, particularly when you put it that way, but equally it's changed over the last 200, 250 years. I mean, if you look at England, the UK, over 250 years and relationship with the population with religion is completely different. And it, I mean, it's unrecognizable in many ways. If you said to someone 250 years ago, you won't have to go to church every Sunday, you will no longer be fined or put in prison for not attending church, they would, you know, they probably see it as a positive thing depending on their worldview. So it's inevitably going to change, as is, and that reflects a change in our understanding of ourselves. And this kind of goes back to that question of truth. So understanding ourselves is a question about truth. So what exists external to our own experience? So I'm coming from a perspective where I'm saying I've got an internal model that models my sensory inputs and somehow reflects something out there. And I believe there is a truth out there. I can't prove it, but I think there's something true and real that my model is an imperfect reflection of. So my sensory inputs are highly limited. It's just, you know, light, it's just sort of touch and those kinds of things. So it's probably going to miss 99% of everything that's out there, or be some weird reflection of it. Or, you know, or maybe I can't even speak in those terms because they're completely human terms. So the more that science kind of pushes back and goes, what about quantum gravity? You know, what about quantum mechanics? I mean, that's the most unintuitive area of science, you know. The more we sort of understand the universe and our place in it, the more our relationship changes with it, and religion goes with that. Or maybe it changes, or maybe it becomes something different. Maybe humanism is the kind of next sort of iteration of religion in some way. Science, maybe. Science isn't a religion, nor is humanism. But you can see that it's, you know, it's that sort of dynamic interaction with our understanding of the world that everything ultimately follows.
I wonder if, given your story and experience, you think that the advances in the kinds of tech we've talked about will lead to the end of religion as a scientific explanation?
I think it already has. I don't think people see religious... People understand that faith is a very different mechanism for believing in things than science is. And that's where that divide is. If it's not easy to evidence, that's where faith comes in. And that's where gods come in and all those kinds of things. And, you know, if that works as a worldview, then, you know, so be it. That's how, you know, we get by.
I'm sure you've got some things to say.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, no,
those questions.
I kind of agree wholeheartedly with most of what you just said. So, yeah, you said your question was something about religion being a
scientific explanation.
Yeah, scientific explanation. I mean, I don't think that's the case. But what I was trying to frame it as, religion answers the questions that are much deeper and go beyond the science. Science is so successful because it's in, you know, it is a self-contained area, but it's in a box in some sense. And then we have these bigger philosophical questions that go beyond, almost in another dimension. So the idea that religion answers some scientific question is never, well, as far as I know, we're not in 20th century.
I
never
have certainly don't, but some people have used it that way.
You know, there are these fine-tuned constants that are consistent with life, for example. But you won't see in a science journal, well, that's because God made them that way.
No, you won't.
I mean, it may be a philosophical discussion to have that, but that's not really science. That's going kind of beyond science.
Well, do you mind if I ask you this before we get to questions? The year 2100... When someone is saying, how should I live? What's the right way to live? What are the right choices I should make? Are they still going to the Bible and the Quran, or are they going to Grok, Claude, ChatGPT, or their genomic medicine specialist, dietitian, who's gene editing their diet for them to tell them how they should live instead?
Well, whatever the latest AI model is, I mean, who knows, really? I mean, you know, I obviously believe that they will be going to the Bible. Some people will be going to the Bible. I believe that's true. Yeah. Some people will believe that. But I mean, in terms of the AI, I mean, I use AI quite a bit. I think, like most people, you sort of veer from thinking this is amazing to thinking, oh, it's a load of rot, because sometimes it gives you something that's completely wrong. A lot of the time it gives you very convincing stuff that, that can be right and sometimes wrong. I don't think, at least the current way that the LLMs are going, I'm not sure it's going to be the answer to everything. But, you know, there are obviously different ways of doing doing machine learning. You know, I don't think it will be conscious ever. But that's,
we got some,
I mean, I have some other reasons for that, going along the arguments of Roger Penrose and people about computation and human brains and the limits of mathematical theories and things, which we could go into, but we've probably run out of time.
Maybe it will come up in the questions. Can we both give our guests a big round of appreciation for each sharing their thoughts? Okay, we have a great question here about the dynamic way that Christianity has changed over time. If the Christianity in 2100 is really, really different to the Christianity of today, is it still the true Christianity at all?
Yes. Well, it was also about medieval Christianity being very different. I mean, I'm not sure the fundamental tenets are very different. There may be different interpretations of small things, but the fundamentals of a God who created the world, of his Son who came to Earth, who died for us. The basic creeds were sort of set down quite early on. But the fundamental tenets of Christianity, I wouldn't say, have changed very much. And so I wouldn't necessarily see they need to change. I mean, it's very helpful, I think, this idea of the two books, the book of Scripture, the Bible, and the book of the world. And, you know, for me, there's a cohesive truth. Sometimes they may appear to be in conflict, and one has to understand things in that context.
That's a terrific question for both of our guests here. You were raised in a completely non-religious home. You were raised in a Christian home. Let's imagine that we wipe the slate completely blank. Okay, do you think, based on the current knowledge that we have, which is growing, we would still, as humans, end up with the kind of beliefs that we have today and that you have landed on yourself? I'll start with you, Simon.
So, yes, to an extent, because I think the forms of religion that we have are pretty much reflections of what we are as humans. So I think they're, you know, it goes that way round, is my belief in it, that, you know, religion comes from humans, therefore they are human shaped. So if humans maintain their shape, then religions would form the same shape. I hoped you were going to ask about science as well. So there's, I think, some Ricky Gervais quote saying about science, you know, if you scrubbed all the textbooks, it would come back looking exactly the same. I'm not entirely sure that's the case. Going back to LLMs, we did an experiment a while ago looking whether we could distinguish between whether cells were going to go on to die in a flask or whether they'd survive. And the parameters that it spat out predicted perfectly whether a cell was going to die or not from, like, you know, a few days beforehand, but not relating to any single thing that we could determine was the thing, was, you know, what was it using to make that prediction? We couldn't work it out from the LLM. And I think science is a bit potentially like that, that it could take a form that's like 90 degrees tilted to what we have currently, and it would be called something else. And it might work just as well, but it would be different. So, yeah.
Wow, fascinating. What would your answer to the question be?
So, I guess I think the religious belief I believe in, Christianity, as I've tried to kind of outline the reasons for it. So it's kind of a two-pronged approach, really. Belief in a God, and that comes from the sort of existential meta questions that we've discussed. Why do we exist? And how can we do science? Why do we think? These bigger questions, I think, are answered successfully if you believe in a theistic God. And then second of all, the more concrete discussion of Jesus of Nazareth that you find in the Bible. It's a historical person, looking at the evidence for that. So that is there, and it seems to me that will remain there. So I would expect Christian belief, as we said before, to be kind of largely the same as it has been and is.
A question for both our guests here. Why neither of you identified science specifically as the reason why you think religion will decline? Simon, you first.
I think science is one of the big reasons that religion might decline, because as our understanding of the world increases and we get better at making predictions about the world, we need to rely less on faith-based beliefs. And there's this sort of idea of the God of the gaps, which is a bit offensive to, you know, if you push it too far. But the idea that when you don't understand something, you say, okay, it's a God thing. And those gaps get smaller and smaller and smaller as we understand the world better and better. So I think kind of they are linked. Yeah.
Mm. Paul?
Okay, no, good. Thanks. I obviously disagree. But the God of the gap, I'm not convinced the God of the gaps kind of thing has ever been much of a motivation. I think these bigger questions are the motivation for belief in God. So why has it decreased is a very interesting question. I mean, I don't know, it's a sort of a sociological question I to some degree. I mean, maybe we don't feel that we need God as much. We, you know, we're a lot more comfortable in modern Western society than we have been. Maybe we spend less time thinking about things, spend more time watching telly or on phones. And there's many sort of reasons I could come up with. I think, I mean, there clearly is a narrative about science, the narrative of God of the Gaps. It is a big influence, I guess, on many people. You know, the idea that evolution sort of explains where we come from influences people. So I also cannot deny that science has affected belief in God as well. I just question whether that's accurate for it to do so, I suppose. Yeah.
Great. So we just had a great question. Again, just following up this idea of wiping the slate clean. There are a lot of ideas in the Bible and also the Quran and texts like that that appear to come from special revelation. We're just wondering, with the way societies go, if we were to wipe the slate clean, do you think we would still be building our societies with the same ideas that seem to have appeared from special revelation or holy scripture? Or do you think we would end up being a very, very different human race, human society altogether? And I'll start with you, Paul.
Yeah, I think there's a lot going on there. I mean, I think we have these intuitions that, for me, are God-given intuitions, moral intuitions, which I guess is largely what we're talking about here. But I do think we need specific revelation. In the Bible, we do have specific revelation from God, and more specifically to tell us. It's a bit of a mixture of both. I think we can go a certain way with our intuition, but we need revelation to really tell us what's going on.
Okay. Now, I imagine with your earlier discussion about religions being human shaped, I can guess what your answer might be to this. But
I don't want to throw in the low blow of slavery, but it's the classic example that in the American War of Independence, the North used the Bible to justify abolishing slavery. The South used it to carry on owning slaves. And you know, that's often the way with all religious texts, is that there's no kind of clear, definitely don't do this, definitely do this. It's very open to interpretation. So even if the slate were wiped clean, maybe it would come back with this sort of slightly uncertain sense of morality that, you know, intuition helps us with, but it's still unclear often how to behave with reference to a spiritual text.
Right, yeah. Yeah, great question. We also had a question here about consciousness and the nature of consciousness. Now, you both deal a lot with modeling, and you both deal a lot with mathematics. And so the question here is, the nature of consciousness being fundamentally a physical thing, or do we think that there's something else going on there? I'll start with you, Paul.
Well, there's this famous sort of hard problem of consciousness that I think people have probably heard of, which is our intuition. We have this intuition of, people talk about the color green or whatever it is, and the feeling that it has within us. It's something very personal, and it's very hard to see how that can come from purely physical stuff. On the other hand, you know, we look around and we see purely physical stuff. So there's a big question there, and that I don't think I'm qualified to answer really. What do I want to say? I mean, the consciousness.
What would be your best guess?
I mean, I tend to veer away from consciousness and go to a bit more towards self-consciousness or you know, reasoning. The sort of discussion we had before. How are we self-aware? How are we self-conscious? As I did briefly mentioned, the sort of arguments that can be made a bit more precise than I'm giving here, which are more intuitive. That I think there's two arguments of this. There's a Penrose one, which argues that the brain cannot be a computer, very rigorously, via kind of Gödel's incompleteness theorem to do with mathematics. And then there's an argument by Plantinga, who's a kind of a theologian philosopher. What's he saying? He basically says that naturalism and evolution, it's a bit along the lines we were saying before, is kind of self-defeating, along the lines of, because how can I trust my own thoughts and views if I'm just naturalistic and evolved? The brain is essentially just doing what it does, but it doesn't necessarily have to map onto any sort of truth. So those are the sorts of arguments I like, and I find them pretty convincing. They're both they tie in with my intuition as well as being a little bit more rigorous, very rigorous.
Yeah, true. What do you reckon to consciousness? Is there a ghost in the machine?
This is what we're talking about before a little bit, but I mean, I can throw in panpsychism at this point,
yes,
which is the idea that consciousness is the fundamental element of reality. Is it? I don't know. It seems unlikely. There's variants on it as well, that there's this one universal consciousness that we're a kind of instantiation of.
Yeah.
I forget the name of that. But, you know, it's in that realm of ideas that are hard to prove, which is kind of the same as the hard problem of consciousness. So how do I demonstrate that you're conscious? I know I am, but is anyone else? You seem to be, but you know, and compellingly so. But these are all sort of ideas that are hard to prove, and they, for me, put them in the same realm as religious claims, that they're difficult to prove, possibly by design. So, is panpsychism true? I don't subscribe to it, but equally, if it were shown to be true, that would be amazing.
Well, it would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you for the question. Fantastic question here. And I'm going to start with you on this, Paul. Is the search for God an empty vein exercise? Does the fact that people are hungry and searching for, and what C.S. Lewis called like the reaching up for God, is that necessarily a sign of anything other than just, well, I suppose our own projection? Or is it all just an empty quest?
Well, I mean, that alone, of course, is not a proof of anything. It's a suggestion, maybe. But ultimately, I'm not going to have my belief in God based purely on the fact that I kind of have this feeling of a search for God. I think I'm trying to say something a bit more precise about our intuitions and about certain arguments. That we've talked about that kind of go beyond the kind of narrow confines of science. Science is amazing, beautiful in its own realm, but then as soon as you go beyond that, there's the idea that there's something more. You know, we've talked about panpsychism, that's something beyond science and beyond naturalism. And so there's the idea that there is something more. So once you allow the idea that there's something more in, then, you know, there's a little chink there, there's a little gap, and then you can start exploring what that something more could be. And I take your point very strongly that you can't prove it. It's not the same as science. And I can't put numbers in and show that this formula, you know, outputs the right results in quite the same way. It's a different sort of knowledge, but equally it doesn't mean it's sort of invalid knowledge. So then we search around and look at the various arguments, and there are very powerful arguments in favor of God. And then again, coming back to the specifics of Christianity, there's this historical event that also deserves looking carefully at.
Simon, what do you make of the religious instinct in people?
I think it's a search, part of our search for meaning, which is part of our search for survival within the universe. So it's an evolutionary sort of emergent property. I don't like the idea of emergence, but it's that kind of idea that it's a result of exactly that process. I don't think it's really different. So the idea of what you're saying, that because people are looking, does that mean that there's something to be sought? I think everyone would agree that that's not compelling. But I think it's often used as a sort of rationale. You think, well, God, there's got to be something there because everyone's kind of looking for it. So I think sort of shining light on that is a good thing because, and then we can reflect and go, oh, why are we doing this? And that sort of sense of introspection, which is great, what we're doing here is kind of, all sharing that sort of reflecting on our own sense of the universe and how we understand it is a really good thing.
Mm. Excellent. So we've got a final question here on whether Christianity and religious frameworks are necessary when we have atheists and humanists and skeptics in our presence who are not raging criminals. Why posit Christianity or divine beings or divine frameworks to make sense of how we should live when we see all around us people without them who are living what we would call good lives?
Sure. I mean, you don't need a faith to live a good life. And indeed, people with faith often don't live good lives. But I don't, I cannot see where the kind of the basis for living a good life in some sense comes from. There's an intuition there, which I think I can explain. It comes from God. There's an intuition that we should live a good life. But what the ultimate reason for it would be, for just determined machines in some sense, then why should I not just do exactly how I feel in any situation? I'm very glad that people don't live like that, but I don't see the reason behind it. So it's distinguishing between the actions and kind of the basis, the meta questions behind morality.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody. It's been great fun. I've enjoyed this very much. I'm looking forward to continuing it as we have lunch. Thank you for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed this this episode of Unbelievable. Look forward to having you both on the show again in future sometime. And thank you to Sam Rhee Floyd Grammar School for hosting us today.